morning here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. And just a reminder, we are now under a week away from the 25th anniversary celebration coming your way Friday, this Friday, March 24th, live at the House of Blues. Doors open at 11 a.m. Live show starts at 12 to 6. And again, if you're interested, I think there's a few tickets remaining. So go ahead and purchase tickets at livenation.com. Just search ESPN Chicago. You must be 21 years of age or older with a valid ID to attend the event. So it's going to be a blast, a great celebration, 25 years in the making here at ESPN 1000. And here's to 25 more great years coming your way, and hopefully long, long time with the Chicago Bears as well. So great way to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the station here at ESPN 1000. I'm Jeff Meller along with Brian Hanley this morning. We will talk with Tyler and Shea a lot about the brackets and where you're at. It hasn't been busted, I assume. Most folks at this point, you know what? Maybe everybody's back in live because almost everybody's bracket has been busted. I guess unless you're holding an Alabama or Houston as your eventual champ, then maybe you've got a crack to slip in there and maybe make some hay, Bri, because it's been a final, wacky tournament.
My Final Four is still alive, and the Kansas dinged my Elite Eight. But again, we need wellness check on Danny Zetterman this morning. But I have Marquette winning it all. Shocking. It's kind of like Pat Fitzgerald liking Skoronski.
There you go.
So Marquette, shocks the world. But hey, the path to get to Houston got a lot easier with the fraud Purdue's getting out and some of the other upsets on that side of the bracket.
So. Yeah, it's been an absolutely chaotic tournament so far. But kudos to you for still having the Final Four alive. You're the first person I've heard actually say that. So who do you have in your Final Four aside from Marquette?
Alabama and Marquette and Houston and UCLA.
Okay. All right. So you're alive and well, and you just need Marquette to go ahead and finish the job, and you will be a very happy man.
They have to get by Tom Izzo today. That's first things first. And can I tell you about the ESPN Chicago app?
Yeah.
It's idiot-proof because I use it, so, it's easy. And it was great to be able to listen to Cap and Jay Hood. And, I've never driven to Columbus before when I was covering colleges. Sometimes, I was on their dime, so I flew.
Mm-hmm.
Not much of a drive. It was like, it reminded me of driving to Champaign for, 4 years of my life. It seemed like 20 years of my life. But, I was going through towns like, I think it was a Roundhead, like a one intersection, one stoplight town. It's a long drive, even though it doesn't seem that long. But
hey. Right,
get out of the car. Yeah,
been there, done that. I actually drove to Columbus with some buddies. We went to a Blue Jackets game, a Blue Jackets Hawks game, years ago. It was probably 20 years ago, to be honest with you. I can't even remember the exact.
Have they been around for 20 years?
Yeah, probably right around there. It was fairly early in the, in their organization's history when we went to go attend the game. That was part of the appeal, right? Like, was to go check.
I think it's been 20 years since I've been here. I mean, that's how long ago I covered colleges. This town has really grown up. I mean, it used to be, I think, one hotel downtown was the Hyatt. I remember Steve Snapp was the sports information director at Ohio State University, and he invited as the SIDs did back in the day. They would take the credit card out and wine and dine media people. So he invited the late great Bob Marcus from the Chicago Tribune, and he invited me too to go down and meet Keith Jackson at the bar of the Hyatt. What a great night! I mean, sitting at a bar listening to Keith Jackson for 4 hours.
Whoa, Nelly!
I mean, unbelievable. I mean, you're sitting there, Steve's paying for all the drinks, and Keith Jackson's entertaining you, and that's what I remember about Columbus, Ohio.
That's probably the best way to spend a night in Columbus, Ohio, to be honest with you.
Lord. I've been here for 2 weeks. It seems like it.
You've yet to outdo it. Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, I've done that drive. I've also done the 2 hour trek to 2.5 hour trek to Champaign multiple times as my my wife was attending law school there for 3 years. So
I did that 3 or 4 times a week. Lou Henson, are you staying down? Brian, you want to come over and watch some basketball? You staying? I'm like, no, Lou, I'm getting the hell out of here after the game.
Yes.
I'd get home at 2 in the morning. I couldn't spend another night in Champaign.
No
doubt.
Where did
you go to school? I should know this. Where did you go?
I went to Loyola. So I went to Loyola for undergrad and met my wife there, and then she went to Champaign for law school. So, yes, I have done that trek plenty of times in my life, like you said, too many to that I care to remember. So, but yes, and they were bounced as well to very few people's surprise. I think most people saw that one coming a mile away.
Oh, boy, I did. Yeah. Again, the Big Ten, they had 8 or 9 teams in, and none of them are any good. So.
Yeah, yeah. I think 2 left, right? They've got Michigan State hanging around. And then
not for long. Yeah. A few more hours.
It's another down year for the Big Ten when it comes to the tournament. But we'll talk some more tourney with Tyler and Shea.
I think Brett Underwood deserves a raise. That $4 million he's making, they're stealing money from him. They got to give him more money. And again, Chris Collins needs a new paper too. No.
Yep, that's how it goes in the illustrious state of Illinois when it comes to college hoops. The smallest achievement is celebrated quite
nicely. Mediocrity, we need more of that.
Rousing success for Northwestern as they advanced to the second round and lost last night. They kept it close. So what are you going to do? That's the game they're playing. Aaron Rodgers, interesting stuff. Not interesting, but is it surprising? Probably not to most. He, of course, finally came out of the darkness and revealed to Pat McAfee earlier this week his intention for next season.
So I've shifted my focus to entertaining, what the plane would look like. And had, the Packers granted, obviously, permission for the Jets to come out and visit. We had a nice visit. They decided to leave their cars in the street, which attracted paparazzi attention, which got, a few of them photographed, which I thought was pretty funny. But
made a couple mistakes early.
But we had a nice conversation, and I told them, listen, I'm not ready to make a decision about anything. I want to get back into my workouts and see how it feels, to really hit it hard for a week. I've obviously been working out before that, but to really hit it hard for a week and to see if that drive and the passion is still there, and then I'll see where we're at. And so, again, this is why this is not a decision here. The decision, I think, was made in my mind whether or not I was able to admit at that point, really on that Tuesday, I wanted to play. And then it was, how is my body feeling? Is it going to be able to hold up? So at this point, as I sit here, I think since Friday, I made it clear that my intention was to play, and my intention was to play for the New York Jets.
Okay.
And I haven't been holding anything up at this point. It's been compensation that the Packers are trying to get for me and kind of digging their heels in. So I would just, I think it is interesting at this point to step back and look at the whole picture. My side, love and appreciation, gratitude for everything that Green Bay has done for me. Love, so much love and gratitude and just heart open for the Packer fans.
Hell yeah.
And what it meant to be their quarterback. And also the reality of the situation, it is what it is. The Packers would like to move on. They've let me know that in so many words. They've let other people know that in direct words. And because I still have that fire and I want to play and I would like to play in New York, it's just a matter of, getting that done at this point.
Interesting to see the breakup on full display publicly, right? That's the one thing where, and also, it's hilarious how he is just following the Brett Favre footsteps to a T here, right?
Sure.
Right? It's like, it's unbelievable that it's playing out this way and that he is now going to be traded to the Jets at some point once they hammer out the compensation, because there's no way after this point they can go back. They've reached the point where Rodgers doesn't want to be there anymore. The Packers don't want to go through this song and dance. And they've also put themselves in a spot where with Jordan Love's contract, they kind of need to figure out what they have. So there's no scenario where I can envision Rodgers going back next year. But it is hilarious to me that he is following the Brett Favre playbook.
What's Pat McAfee going to do for content once Aaron Rodgers actually retires? Breathless. Yes. Go, Aaron. Tell us some more. I mean, Rick Morrissey, I think, wrote in Sun Times in a column that, he needed a towel. Pat McAfee needed a towel after slobbering all over, or Aaron Rodgers needed a towel after being slobbered all over for however long he was out with Pat McAfee. It is just, a buddy of mine, Bill Farley, said, currently Aaron Rodgers is still the QB of the Green Bay Packers. He's also the GM of the Jets and, of course, the owner of the Chicago Bears. So it just... just get on with it. And, oh, I love the Green Bay Packers, but not really. But they're forcing me out. Okay, whatever. Move on.
I guess the Packers can kind of hold this up until probably around draft week. At that point, you would think they would like to get this finalized because and that's probably the longest. I wouldn't be surprised. Well, yeah, because,
I heard like Jay Will and Keyshawn, they're talking on Friday morning about, well, June 1, the cap hit becomes much more manageable. But, you know, the Jets don't want to wait till that, you know, for bookkeeping and rounding errors.
And even if you're the Packers, I think I understand that, but it's you're also don't you want the draft pick compensation this year?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Like you'd hate to wait till after the draft. That would seem, you know,
unless you're getting a future, you know, conditional. Yeah. And they debated, you know, whether it's going to be a first round pick, a second round pick, what that looks like, because as you said, there's no going back at this point. So, you know, the debate was who has the leverage. Do the Jets can kind of name their price, or the Packers say he's still Aaron Rodgers, and you know we expect legitimate whatever that is. I mean, can you get a first round pick? Probably not. You probably get a second round pick, and if they get, you know, they win, they get to the playoffs or win their division, maybe it moves up to a first round pick. I don't know, but it's not going to be multiple prime picks, so it's going to be something everyone can kind of digest, but. Good Lord. I mean, it's just exhausting watching this, even though you want them out of the North Division as quickly as you can get them out, right?
Yeah, and that's the question, though, is now that it looks like he will not be the quarterback for the Packers next season, does this open up an opportunity for the Bears sooner than expected? Because it looks like, I mean, everything I've heard from people and read that people I respect their opinion, that it's, you know, it's basically everyone's given it the Lions division to lose here because nobody believes in the Vikings. They've made a lot of cost cutting moves and, you know, free agency here because they were up against the cap without making any real additions. So the Vikings, which were already proven to be a fraud with their negative point differential last season, despite their 13 wins, you know, they were the best team in the division. The Packers clearly, nobody's really selling you that Jordan Love, they think is going to be the next great quarterback. Only Bears fans who are afraid of their shadow really are the ones who are concerned about Jordan Love at this point. And then, sure, the Detroit Lions were a nice little story that have a lot of good players on the roster. But, I mean, are you really going to buy that Jared Goff is the, you know, going to lead this team to great heights? I mean, I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around the idea that the Lions are the clear team to beat in the NFC North.
Think about that. I mean, a year ago, 2 years ago, it was laughable. Now you're right. They're the clear front runners, such as that is, what that looks like. And if you're Ryan Poles, you really do want to accelerate your rebuild process because this division is there for the taking for years to come.
That's the thing is, you know, if you're a football fan, you know, like it does, you can oftentimes turn things around much quicker in the NFL than any other sport. You know, there's so often players are in and out of this league within, you know, the average career span for an NFL player is a little over 3 years. And so the churn and burn, it happens in the NFL. And so if you can hit on a few guys, you can get things turned around quickly, especially if Justin Fields takes the step that everybody's hoping for. The Bears could be a surprise team. And, you know, it's not through their own additions. It's basically the rest of the division coming back to them. And so I'll be curious.
I haven't checked on it in a few years, but even a few years ago, I think from the outhouse to the penthouse, like 25% of teams could go from last place to a playoff team within 1 year. That's how the end. And that's what Pete Rozelle wanted when he started the whole parity thing decades ago, right?
Yeah.
So, to your point, it's not that astounding for teams to make drastic moves up. A quarter of the league does it pretty much on an annual basis.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if it was even higher at this point because you're right. Like, I think time and time again, we've seen it where, you know, the previous year's worst team in the division comes up and out of nowhere wins the division, and it only takes a couple of key injuries and a team just getting better at the right time to all of a sudden be the darling of the league for coming out of nowhere, like you said. So it'll be interesting to see if, even though he's trying to be disciplined in his approach with everything in free agency, I'll be really curious to see what the Bears end up doing in the draft, because there is an opportunity here that maybe did not exist clearly as the offseason began. All of a sudden, the NFC North, they can finally do what Ryan Poles asked. They can go ahead and take the North and never give it back. Maybe they do so a year earlier than they anticipated. Be curious to see how this plays out. 312-332-3776 if you want to check in with us. Meller and Hanley with you. Up next, how about the World Baseball Classic on center stage last night? Lots of good stuff for Team USA. We'll share the highlight with you coming up next.
The 0-2 to Turner, and he throws this one. Deep left field. Trey Turner, grand slam home run on an 0-2 pitch. The United States takes a 9-7 lead.
Highlight courtesy of Fox there last night. Trey Turner hits a grand slam in the eighth inning, and Brian, Trey Turner in the post game called that the biggest hit he's ever produced in his career. Also said that was the loudest crowd he's ever witnessed. Don't tell me that the WBC doesn't mean anything, because the players who are participating in it are having a blast, and it is really interesting. Lance Lynn, by the way, has been awesome in his opportunity to pitch for Team USA to this point, as the United States beats Venezuela. They eliminate Venezuela. They advance. They will play Cuba today in an effort to try and get to the finals, where they will, if they can, take on either Japan or Mexico. So it's been interesting for anybody who's been, who's found themselves, even if you're just a casual fan, if you flipped it on, it's been hard not to get locked in, because it has been really, really competitive when the teams have been on the field.
Yeah, I heard Cap poo-pooing it, and he hasn't watched a minute of it, and he's a baseball guy. He said, but it does nothing for him. But you just said it. See, if I'm Rob Manfred, though, it's a little bit of an issue when guys saying this is more important than the World Series. And they believe that, and they're representing their country, and you can't, you know, debate them on that, or I guess you can judge them on. But see, when you do this and try to multitask, and I know that, you know, Lance Lynn's been great. Tim Anderson's getting validation because all his teammates are saying, this guy's a superstar, you know, in case he needed to hear that from someone outside of Chicago. He's hearing that, right?
You're right, yeah.
But when your own product gets demeaned or takes a back seat to the WBC, that's a little bit of a problem.
That's a great point, and it's interesting because – You know, it really does feel like, if you watch these games, and I understand, like, it's hard to resonate. Like, there is the tournament going on, especially this weekend, right? So
sure.
A lot of sports fans have found themselves watching March Madness, not even knowing the WBC is going on, and that's fine. But I think if you're a baseball fan, if you stumble upon this, or if you've even carved out a few minutes, it's hard not to watch this.
To get caught up in it, right?
And I mean, it's so much better than spring training baseball.
Sure,
like
absolutely.
The old spring training baseball is background noise if you're a baseball fan.
Yep.
You know, it makes you feel maybe warm and fuzzy about the, you know, summer being, you know, around the corner. But the reality is, it's hard to really watch spring training baseball closely for the entirety of a game. But the World Baseball Classic, I'm interested to see if the players playing in this game come out and start the season off in it, just they're more ready, because you cannot tell me, like, guys like Trey Turner and, as you mentioned, Tim Anderson and Mike Trout aren't going to be, they are playing like this a game, like Mike Trout, these are clearly the most intense games he's ever played in. Like,
sure.
If the Angels never make it to the playoffs.
Well, not only that, and again, that's part of baseball's problem. Mike Trout is never, people on the East Coast never see Mike Trout play baseball because of the time change, right? I mean, the time difference. So, and Mike Trout apparently never wants to play in New York. He's happy in Anaheim being a Roomer, even though, you know, he's the best baseball player of a generation or whatever. But so, I mean, and I didn't know Mark DeRosa is a good manager, but apparently he is.
He said, I saw earlier that he mentioned, so Mark DeRosa's father he played for Fairleigh Dickinson. And his father threw one of, I guess, three no-hitters in the university's history. And Mark said he took it as a sign when Fairleigh Dickinson pulled off the upset on Friday that the U.S. was in for good things. Now, I don't know if he expected that he would need a Trey Turner grand slam to save them That's
good managing right there.
Yeah, I know, right?
You dial that up. But if you're a Mets or an Astros fan, you're not feeling too good about this whole tournament.
This is the unfortunate thing because, yes, Jose Altuve, they fear that he suffered a broken thumb. Now, Houston Astros still want their trainers to x-ray and look him over, but Team Venezuela, their trainer said that he suffered a broken thumb last night. And of course, Edwin Diaz, I tore his patellar tendon in a celebration. And so he's feared to be lost for the season. But yep. I guess word has it that there's a chance if the Mets go deep into the playoffs that based on how quick they were and actually having the surgery occur, they actually... So it was Wednesday night when Diaz's injury occurred. It was, and then by Thursday afternoon, just based on the fact that the New York Mets team doctor was in Miami, and also they had a world-class facility, a surgical facility where they could actually do the surgery. They were able to get the imaging done like the early Thursday morning, and they were able to turn around and do the surgery on Edwin Diaz less than 24 hours after the injury occurred. And that's critical because they avoid some of the scar tissue forming around the knee, which could actually increase the odds of a more successful recovery and maybe be back quicker. So just by sheer happenstance, I guess the Mets may be able to. Now, again, it's probably unlikely, but there's an outside chance that Diaz could pitch for the Mets. But you know, that's unfortunate because, you know, Edwin Diaz, Timmy Trumpet, like when he comes out, that phenomenon was clearly something that had kind of took over baseball last year. I haven't seen a closer with an entrance like that since Mariano Rivera. So
can we get Lonzo Ball to that same facility, that same surgical facility, instead of the urgent care place he's going to? I mean,
well, that's the perfect transition and something I'd like to talk about here shortly that the Bulls are facing. But just to kind of put a bow on the WBC stuff. Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing, right? And I don't know. It is so competitive, and these players are taking it so seriously that they do celebrate when they win, right? And Jose Altuve wants to win for Venezuela, and he's digging in the box and taking the ball off the hand. It's like
96 miles an hour can break a thumb.
Yeah, yeah, and so I don't know. It's a great event, but I don't know. If there's no practical time period where you could play it other than March, right? You can't play it after the season's over. No one would ever ask their pitchers who have gone through a full season to go ahead and continue pitching. But it's a rock and a hard place for teams because you have these multi-million dollar superstars who want to play for their countries, and it's rough because now the Astros and Mets are going to lose critical pieces for, you know, significant portions of the season.
Yeah. And you know, even with the Players Association and MLB agreeing, like, Shohei can't pitch. And you said it. I mean, you know, guys' arms would be coming out of their socket if you had them play another 2 weeks after a season, after playoffs too, right? The good players are being in the playoffs. And there is no good time, but, you know, the players want to do it, and I guess it's here to stay.
Yeah. U.S. plays Cuba tonight as they try and find their way into the finals. That game is at 6 o'clock on FS1, and Mexico and Japan will square off on Monday to see if either of them can land in the finals. So we'll see how it goes. You mentioned Lonzo Ball there. We got more bad news, but we kind of knew it was coming. We'll talk about that next here on ESPN 1000.
It's been really slow. I mean, I'm just being honest. This has been
any setbacks?
No. Mm-mm.
Lakers third worst. We told you Bulls third best. Lonzo gets it to go.
Okay, Lonzo.
And Levine out the play. They just keep you on that right side of the floor.
Ball all alone in the rotation of the ball.
And it's gotten better, but is he clearly, you know, without any pain? No, he's not. He still has pain.
Rotation for the Lakers.
Ball off the bounce for two.
Is putting the ball in the veteran's hands.
Oh, no. Ball with the strip. Ball with the dunk. Top 10 in steals.
But I just don't have any timetable of when he could even be back.
A lot of give and take, a lot of exchange of pleasantries between the fans and the players. Lonzo answers.
Pump it outside to DeRozan. He'll raise for three. Rimming off Caruso, the back tap to Ball for three, and he'll knock it down.
This game about the ovation he got in what you're talking about, a road arena.
Lonzo connects.
It's been really slow. I mean, I'm just being honest. This has been
setbacks.
No, I just don't have any timetable of when he could even be back.
Jeff Meller, Brian Hanley with you till 11 o'clock when Tyler Rocky and Shane Norling take over. Plenty of March Madness coverage with them. They'll join us in about 10 minutes from now. We'll crosstalk, but we got word earlier this week that Lonzo Ball will undergo a cartilage transplant in his left knee. It'll be a third surgery on that left knee, which he originally injured way back on January 14th of 2022. And it has been a long, slow process, and it has not been encouraging. Also got word from Adrian Wojnarowski that there are concerns that Ball's ability to resume his career are in question. So they're hoping that the quote was that this will give him a pathway to play again. But clearly, that does not sound great when you hear it reported like that, Bri.
And then if he is, if this is successful and what, three surgeries within 14 months, who knows? And I mean, the whole idea, it's been written and talked about that he has a player option in the final year of his contract and he could opt out. I mean, obviously it's a player option. Boy, wouldn't that be poor form to once you were able to come back to opt out and go to another team after the Bulls sat here and waited on you and paid you and finally got you healthy? I mean, nothing surprises me anymore, but the whole question whether he's going to play basketball yet for one more minute is unbelievable at this point.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if they got to that point, it's interesting because my thoughts are just, will Lonzo Ball ever play basketball again? And if he does, can he be anything close to the player the Bulls thought they were getting? Like, opting out really hadn't even occurred to me. But you're right that, yes, certainly if the Bulls stand by him and he misses, you know, multiple seasons of that contract and then just to opt out when you finally are, if you get to that point where you're healthy and returning, that would be unfortunate. I will say the one thing you can never criticize Jerry Reinsdorf and the Chicago Bulls for. No. You can criticize them for their inability to get back to winning titles after Michael Jordan left, but in terms of taking care of injured players, that is one thing that this organization never skimps on. And, hey, you know,
just talk to Jay Williams.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
$3 million, you know, just said, you know, your contracts, no matter, you know, how this ends up, we're paying you. And, but the fact of the matter is they've won two playoff series since 2011, and 1998 is a long time in the rearview mirror for a championship.
Yeah, it's rough. And they are, listen, they won last night. They've won a couple in a row, beating the Timberwolves in double OT and then beating the Heat. So they're hanging around. They're in that 10th spot right now for the play-in. And this is, you know, this is tough because I get it. Listen, they're professional players. You know, Patrick Beverley has given them a little bit of a spark.
Yep.
DeMar DeRozan has really come to play as of late. And
Zach is showing up on a nightly basis.
So all of a sudden, the players that you are counting on to be the leaders of the team are playing well night in and night out, and they're getting the Bulls back into, again, that play-in spot. But it's, you know, again, it's so tough because it just seems like if they don't retain their lottery pick, and I'm saying lottery pick because, you know, I don't know if they obviously could make the playoffs, but if they do that, their first-round pick goes to Orlando, and it really seems like the only way out of the wilderness here is if the Bulls get lucky, some lottery luck, and land themselves a top-four pick and maybe a player to help change the fortune of the franchise.
Well, and John Greenberg from The Athletic tweeted out earlier in the week, is anyone still mostly, you know, invested in the Chicago Bulls, you know, watching those games? And I tweeted back at him, is that a rhetorical question? How do you get excited over we're number 10? Woo-hoo. I mean, you know, the stated goal was by AK was to be at least a second round playoff team. And that's, you know, if that's not even exactly reaching for the stars. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, oh, well, if we put on a full court press, we can be a play in team. How do you get excited over that? And the idea is to win champ. John Paxson used to say we judge ourselves around here by winning championships, and which is nice. And you want to believe that. But again, haven't done it in a hell of a long time.
And that's part of the reason why the Lonzo Ball news is so devastating, though, too, because they were, before he was injured, they were playing at a really high level. And so the idea that, okay, you know, a little bit of continuity and maybe you can reach or get closer to those heights that you were at last January when, you know, things were going well and you were actually atop the Eastern Conference standings. But we're now at a point where Lonzo Ball, you can't be counted out in any way. And so you can't sell the fans on continuity this upcoming offseason. You're going to have to somehow, some way, make some type of move, and Vooch is going to be a free agent. So I don't know if you really, it sounds like from all indications, you know, that they're going to be doing everything that they can to re-signing him, because it's almost, they don't want to look at Vooch as a sunk cost. They're looking at him as a key addition that they traded away assets for. And so they want to retain the asset. And you just wonder, is that going to plunge you deeper into dismay? And you know what? Are they going to go into the darkness like Aaron Rodgers here, but without any future of coming out anytime soon?
Well, you know, Vooch, I think he's going to, I mean, the money being equal, and I think it will be, he's going to go, he'll want to go win something. And the season he's having, he's going to get paid. And unfortunately, then that will not play out very well for the Bulls front office. But, you know, that team you alluded to last year, it was a Cinderella team. It was a fun team. It was a likable team. When everything was going great, they were one of the surprise stories in the NBA, and everyone was emotionally invested in watching. It was must-see TV, right? Mm-hmm. That so far, I mean, it's so far from where we are now, you know, 14 months later with the Lonzo Ball injury in particular. It's just a totally different team and totally different dynamic.
Yeah, and I just, you know, you watch it, and it's hard to get excited about a win last night against the Heat, right? Because you're saying to yourself, okay,
You're sitting,
and it's like they're not even making a push for it. You're sitting in the 10 spot here, right? It's you know, and the reality is that the Pacers and Wizards passing you would be much more beneficial. You'd hope for the long term health, because you know if you're in a play-in tournament and you get bounced, I mean, you know, I don't know at this point. You know, I'm apoplectic about the team. I just don't know where you go from here. You know, based, you know, I don't know how you could trust Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan at this point to be the guys to turn this franchise around. And just the play-in tournament is not good enough.
No, and you know, the rule of thumb is you need three stars, all-stars, to even begin talking about contending for a championship. And now the debate is certainly, you know, Zach's a max player. Is he really, you know, he's not among the elite, right? Maybe he's a top 25 player. He's certainly not a top 10 player in the league. So how many players do you have? You need three? Do you even have one? I'd say no, you don't.
No. I agree with you there. 312-332-3776. He's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller. Up next, we crosstalk with Tyler Aki, Shea Norling, as we get you set for the men's basketball tournament. March Madness is here. We're breaking it down on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Jeff Meller, Brian Hanley, wrapping things up here on ESPN 1000. That was bringing Tyler Aki and Shea Norling. As Brian mentioned, he's on assignment getting set for Marquette, Michigan State, covering that one unbiasedly, of course.
Oh, don't start. He's right out of the box.
He's got a Sparty hat on. He's taunting you, bro.
Of course he does.
You and I are at war today, Hanley. I apologize.
Oh, well, you know, it feels like I've been here for 2 weeks. I'm exhausted already. And the game's still 4 hours away, for love of God, four and a half.
Columbus. You know, is it at the Ohio State Arena?
No, Nationwide.
Oh, Nationwide. Okay.
Yeah, gotcha. I think the women's tournament is at Ohio State. I saw it on TV at a restaurant last night.
Okay.
There were like 12 people there. Yeah. So, but the Shea, everyone's picking Sparty, so I'm feeling pretty good about it.
Yeah.
Everywhere I look and read. Everyone, you know, and then Tyler, he hasn't believed in Marquette all year, so why would he? We have a little wager going. And
we do.
He stepped up to the plate. I said, if Marquette's a Sweet 16, isn't a Sweet 16 team, I give him $100 because he doesn't have him in the Sweet 16. And I said, if they do get past Sparty and we're a Sweet 16 team, I didn't know it was part of USC, but after watching that game in person, USC belongs in the Big Ten because they're terrible too.
Is that the new insult we're throwing around? Belongs in the Big Ten.
I really like that.
Yeah, Tom Izzo was talking about how great the defense for Michigan State was on Friday, and all I saw was USC players who were afraid to shoot. So, but Tyler stepped up. I said if Marquette does get through today and is a Sweet 16 team, I asked him to donate $50 to either the Greater Chicago Food Depository or one of my other favorite charities, Fortunate Pooches and Lab Rescue. And Tyler, making big coin now, stepped up and said, I'll match your $100. And if Marquette falls today, which they won't, I will donate $100 to feed my starving children. So everybody wins.
Dueling
it's a
charity
very charitable wager. Yep. Yeah.
That's pretty good. For a moment, I thought Tyler was the only one giving money to charity. So
then based on whether or not Marquette won.
Right. Then if Michigan State wins, I'm actually taking food away from the charities. That wouldn't have been good.
Yeah, well, Shay, you still have your first communion money, so I know. Don't worry about that.
I need to find that book where you only have to you only take in if your team wins, and you don't have to pay out if you lose. That's how I want to start wagering. That's a good way to do it. Still yet to find that book, but nevertheless, maybe one day. Yeah. What has stood out to you guys in the first weekend here? I'm
chaos.
Surprised. Brian, what's up?
Chaos?
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, because Brian, I'll give him credit. He's still got his Final Four alive and well.
That's pretty impressive. Yep. The way
I have Marquette winning everything. So, yeah.
Okay.
That's where it falls
apart. Of course I do.
That's where it falls
every
apart.
Every 20 years, we have a legitimate team. Even though Tyler doesn't believe this team's legitimate, I covered that Final Four team in 2003. So every 20 years, we get a team that actually is in the conversation.
Dwayne Wade has retired from his NBA career.
Think about that, right?
Back the last time, Lord. Yeah. So,
The thing that stood out to me is, are we at a point now where we have to pick a 15 seed every year?
Yeah.
Like, it's happened the last 3 years now.
Because the transfer portal.
Brian brought up the transfer portal. Like, forget 15, though, or 16, right? Like, I think the question is, like, is this, we'll see how it plays out and if there's any actual something to draw upon in future years. But if we start to get the point where all of a sudden it's upsets all over the place and you don't know who to pick, it will take a little bit of the fun out of March Madness when it comes to picking brackets. Because
it's already a crapshoot anyway, though.
There's an element of at least you can still salvage things. If it gets to the point, though, where 15 and 16s can take down 1 and 2 seeds every year, it's going to take some of the fun out of picking your bracket.
Don't you feel like bracket pools have already gotten a little bit smaller, though? I feel like daily wagering is cutting into your bracket pool.
Yes, I think you're right on that.
I was telling Jeff that I was in a survivor pool until Purdue got me on Friday. I had two entries. I had them winning one game. I didn't think they would win two games in this tournament. I thought they were a fraud, but I thought certainly they wouldn't be the second number one seed in the history of the tournament to lose. But thank you, Matt Painter.
Biggest upset in tournament history.
At least you made it to day two of your survivor pool.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, 23.5-point favorite, I think, in that game.
Yep.
What the hell?
Well, that's a great point, too, Brian, because if you look back, like, late 90s, early 2000s, number one, number 16, it was a lot of 35-point, 40-point favorites.
Sure.
Anymore, it's 20 to 22.5. It just shows you how far the floor has come up.
Well, Kansas yesterday was the 3-point favorite. They were the shortest number one seed in a second round game in the history of the tournament.
Wow.
And they didn't survive it, by the way. Danny Zetterman's not listening, I hope. But yeah, so, Tyler thought there'd be chaos, and there was, but it just wasn't in the region he thought so far.
Well, no, I thought that East region would have some, and I guess there's only been one chaotic game in that East region so far, but yeah, it has been all across the board. I think another thing, too, is just that the average athlete these days is so much better as well. And with the AAU circuits and stuff like that, like the average athlete is so good where, and that's who's going to a lot of these 14, 15, 16 seeded teams, is you're getting a lot of average athletes there and they go out there and it's just so much better. The gap's closed. They've played against some of these guys their entire lives too.
The AAU circuit, right?
There's just a familiarity there as well. And, oh, by the way, now with a lot of these fifth and sixth year guys with the COVID year as well, there's experience there.
See, but now that goes away too, right? This is the last year for that. So,
well, now there's a conversation that they may just make college basketball. There's going to be talk that they're going to make it so there's 5 years of eligibility, and that's the standard now.
And with the NIL money, some guys will be happy to spend the extra year on campus if they're making a couple million dollars.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of Princeton and the 15 seed, Blake Peters from Evanston, Illinois. I don't know if you guys remember this. When he was a freshman at Evanston, he hit like a full court buzzer beater to beat, I believe it was Maine South, and it was nominated for one of the ESPY's plays of the year. And now he's going out and putting together amazing performances in the NCAA tournament.
How did Chris Collins not get him?
Well, would have been nice. Speaking of Princeton, what is in the water?
The state of New Jersey.
We talk about the athletes being a higher level. Those are the whitest kids you know playing for Princeton. I am shocked how well they've been able to play in this tournament so far.
Well, you look at the Shockers over the last couple of years. It's all out of New Jersey. It's St.
Peter's,
Dickinson, and Princeton.
Teaneck. I didn't know they were in Teaneck. I don't know where Teaneck is, but I just like saying Teaneck.
I love, too, Jeff Goodman's note from Fairleigh Dickinson. If there wasn't a rule where teams who transition into D1 have to wait 4 years to be eligible, they wouldn't have even been there because Merrimack would have been dancing instead of FDU. I mean, just ridiculous. And then they author just a ridiculous upset.
Is that true? There's not one guy who's 6'2" on that team?
Their tallest guy is 6'6", and they were the team that beat Zach Edey.
Purdue was the tallest team per KenPom, and Fairleigh Dickinson was the shortest Division I team per KenPom. It was literally David versus Goliath.
And David came through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what do you guys got coming up today? Lots of talk, I imagine, about the tournament.
Yeah, we're going to talk about, just the one seeds going down. We've got a pair already, and we're not even through Sunday yet. And then also... We're going to get into a little bit more of the 15 seed conversation as well. Like, is it time to pick one every single year? And we had some great games. And who's the new favorite? Who should be the new favorite based on what we've seen so far?
It's the basketball power Alabama that they've always been.
Just
a matter of time until Alabama.
Well, look, UCLA's going to get healthy too in the next couple of weeks. Don't you think? They get to the final. They get to Houston. Are they going to have a full team at that point?
Well, they won't have a full team. They'll still be without Jalen Clark.
Yeah.
I loved this UCLA team all season long. But seeing Jalen Clark, who's probably the best defensive player in the country, go out with an Achilles injury that's going to set him out for the whole tournament, that was really disheartening to see. But
they look like a machine anyway. Yeah, Jaime Jaquez and Tiger Campbell, they just have so much experience. They have a great coach.
Yeah, and we talked about it too. Like, that Pac-12 championship, knowing that you were going to be without Jalen Clark as well, they played that game as well as anyone could have asked them to play against Arizona in that Pac-12 championship. So that was a best-case scenario loss, I feel like, for them.
I don't know if it's just the obsessive-compulsive in me, but I don't like having three number ones play on the same day.
I thought about that too, thing.
And granted, it wouldn't have mattered necessarily with Purdue, know. For whatever reason, I prefer my stuff split up equally, at least on that first weekend.
Yes, I'm actually with you there on that, Jeff. I think that they could have done a better job of just kind of. I'm trying to think of the best way to put it, but like mixing up the game so that there is an even level of competition on
at least
each
based
day.
On the seedings,
yes,
right?
Based on seedings.
And granted, that may not play out because you never know where you're going to get your competitive games. But there's something to having two number one seeds play on each day, assuming they make it.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Like, thanks to Purdue, we don't have a number one seed playing today. Mm-hmm. So
I will say this though, I do like having the chaos more on a Saturday than a Sunday.
Yeah, no chaos today.
A little bit. Is it really chaos, Brian? You're a 3-point favorite. 2.5, depending on where you look. It's not really chaos.
I know, Shay.
We got a coin flip.
Okay. Bring out Ahoya. That's all I can tell you.
It all opened up for Bri. I told him it's there for the taking now. If they don't go on and win this thing, it's going to be disappointment.
If they get through today, I like our path to Houston.
I do too.
I think we got a shot.
I think it could be true for both teams, to be honest. Yeah. Like if Michigan State loses today, or it's a classic Izzo Final Four with one of his worst team runs, or Marquette wins today and they go to the Final Four. Like either way, this kind of, to me, maybe this is a bit of an out there take, feels like the game for the Final Four in that region.
Yeah, I think it is, Shay, and you're welcome for Joey Hauser, okay?
All right, Bri, we're going to let you go get an early start on
Jeff,
your game,
for putting
my man.
Up
Make
with
sure
me.
Yeah. We'll be reading that report that you file later today after the game, all right?
Yeah.
on assignment.
Yeah, working on that.
You're working on deadline, all right?
Exactly right. I haven't written a game story in 20-some years, but I'll try and remember how to do it. Yeah.
10 minutes after the horn.
All right. Every game story now is conducted in 140 characters on Twitter
anyway.
So that's all we're looking for from you, Bri. All right, he's Brian Hanley. Yeah. I'm Jeff Meller. Shay Norling and Tyler Ockey are coming up next with Basketball U on ESPN 1000. Thanks to Kendra Smith for producing. We'll talk to you again next week here on ESPN 1000.